So klingt frische Musik. Und so klingt frische bei Aldi. Immer gut, immer günstig, immer vielfältig. Kurz gesagt, frische für alle. Zum Aldi-Preis. Diese Woche rote Tafeläpfel aus Deutschland. 2 Kilo für nur 1,79 Euro. Oder Mini-Roma-Rispentomaten 300 Gramm für nur 1,11 Euro. Entdecke viele weitere Angebote zum Aldi-Preis. Und weiter geht's mit frischer Musik für jeden Geschmack. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
Hello, this is Those Conspiracy Guys Swapcast with Julian and Joe from
The History of the Netherlands.
That's the voice that you'll hear if you go and listen to The History of the Netherlands. These two guys are from a faraway land, and we sit in Amsterdam in Joe's apartment doing a swapcast, and I want to introduce you to these two guys. We went on a boat trip yesterday with Julian at the helm, and they are part of Those Damn Boat Guys, and their show is about history, looking at history from a different point of view, trying to question everything along the lines of Those Conspiracy Guys people, but they look at it a little bit more academically than I do with my Thundercats fucking asides and talking about my dick.
We talk about dicks.
Well, you can. Dicks are part of history.
Yeah.
You can introduce yourself, lads. What's your show about?
Thanks very much, Gordo. So I'm Joe, and as the host and co-writer of The History of the Netherlands, we look at the history of the Netherlands going from pretty far back. We started at the end of the last ice age, and at the moment we're in about the 1300s.
That's a fucking weird place to start. Like, just the general, like, the start of the last ice age. It sounds like something...
Yeah.
You could, do you know what I mean? It's not exactly here.
We actually called the first episode 99% of Dutch history.
Right.
Because that is the case. It was
a really long time ago. Yeah. And most things happened, but unfortunately we don't really know what happened because there's not that much evidence.
It's all covered with water now, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, there was.
So that is probably the defining thread of how we're looking at Dutch history. This place is a swamp. And it's the story of people figuring out how to live in a swamp.
There's so many beautiful people that come from the swamp, though. It's like a load of culture, a load of history, a load of, you know, political advancement, loads of progressive politics and stuff.
Been developing since the last ice age.
Right? Yeah, and you guys are talking about it. But it just seems, like a weird, like, not arbitrary, because obviously it's important, but like in our Hollow Earth episode or Atlantis episode, we talked about this like antediluvian timeline after Younger Dryas. And the water recedes. Like, what made you pick from the last ice age to go from?
I think we were just looking for what evidence there was of people living here.
Yeah.
And it seems like the first remnants of any kind of
human habitation,
human Neanderthal habitation comes from around that time.
About 45,000 years. That's
a lot.
It's been a while since we wrote that episode.
Yeah,
so I'm going to forget exactly.
So some of the, definitely the timeline is that there were people here, 30 to 40,000 years ago, and then they left, or so the evidence or lack of evidence shows, and then returned. And there was a Neanderthalic presence. They found sort of Neanderthalic remains at the bottom of the North Sea, because the North Sea at that time was a huge icy tundra where you could walk all the way from, say, Denmark to Ireland, which would have been a trip.
Yeah, they say there was a bridge between Ireland and Scotland when the water was down that low.
Oh, for sure.
And then when the water came up, the Irish, or the Scottish, were just Irish people who could swim.
Yeah, who couldn't speak properly.
Yeah. Just came over. I was one of the most drunk Irish people. Just go over because I like the rain and the cold, you know what I mean?
You just ticked off one of my life's bucket lists, which is to hear an Irishman do a Scottish accent.
Well, that was a drunk Glaswegian. Well, get more specific. That's a really far back place to go for that history. Like,
yeah.
I learned from Julian on the Those Damn Boat Guys boat tour, which we'll talk about in a little
while. Nice little plug there.
Absolutely. It was great crack.
ThoseDamnBoatGuys.com.
We do boat tours in Amsterdam, the best that you can get.
This episode is brought to you by Those Damn Boat Guys. It's not. There's no sponsorship at all. It's just
bastards.
We went on the tour yesterday, and there was loads of like interesting little tidbits. I was also in the Versets Museum and got to find out about the massively diverse kind of religious background that Amsterdam, or like that the whole country of the Netherlands has. So they had like Catholics and Protestants and Jews, and then like socialists, like who were obviously a-religious or whatever, all kind of living together in a tolerant harmony.
Well, that's...
Yes, sorry.
I don't know if it's exactly what you could say.
Relatively speaking.
Yeah, but I'm talking in the last maybe 100 years, but no, before that there was wars.
Compared to the rest of like other cities in Europe, certainly there's been a history of more tolerance here, but it's complicated.
Yeah.
Because it's not like... Everything comes down to being in a swamp, right? And you've got where we are is the point where the rivers that have come from like Switzerland and Germany and France have run downhill out into the North Sea. And so the people living here have just always had to deal with flooding coming from both sides.
Living on a city delta.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. It's just the swamp. And so one of the theories, I guess, or explanations for so-called Dutch tolerance is that what matters more is that you work together rather than highlight your differences, because protecting against flooding is a collective endeavor. So yeah. Water doesn't give a shit if you're Catholic or Jewish or Anabaptist or Protestant or, you know,
black or white, black or gay or straight, or whatever. Exactly.
So it's unity through necessity.
That's one of the sort of main arguments made in Dutch history. Yeah.
Yeah. I found a lot of, so like we were talking to people in town doing some interviews and stuff. You can check that out. If you're a Patreon subscriber for those conspiracy guys, there's videos and stuff up there, and talking about like, you know, more modern politics, like weed tolerance for sex work and these kind of people coming over and just making a mess themselves all over the canals. Like that stuff went back to, you said your most recent episode.
You had a good day yesterday.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah, I don't smoke anymore, but it was a bit of crack. We went to talk to some weird, cool people. And it seems that like... the tolerance that I'm trying to get my wrap my head around, the tolerance part where it's like, what was it that you said yesterday, Julian, that Catholics still had to buy pepper? Do you know what this, it was all, it may be not a necessity for survival, as you said, Joe, like that they're all fighting against the perpetually coming flood, that maybe there was a...
there's a huge...
what's it called? Hedokeblad.
Yeah, Hedokeblad.
Yeah,
Hedokeblad, yeah, nice. Which is the Dutch word for, yeah, go on,
tolerance,
I don't
within
care.
The law.
Yeah. So this...
An official policy to turn a blind eye.
Yeah, this Hedokeblad goes for marijuana, goes for prostitution. But Joe, you're kind of saying that like the people in Holland historically are... They don't make this like homogenous society where it's just one major like religion or politic, that they have to work together to survive. But also there's this like financial...
to make money. Yeah, I mean, they are...
a financial thing that's unspoken.
In a swamp, you've got no resources. So you've just got to make money however you can. And that's...
and the way that they did it was by being the middleman in everyone else's business. Because you're at the end of the river, so you can make boats, you can sail down those rivers, you can sail around the sea, you can pick up stuff from one place and bring it to another place and make money.
And
that's,
again,
that's what they want to do.
You don't care who you make money from.
Right.
Yeah, money is money.
Money has no
color. The best example often cited is...
except in America, where it's green for some reason.
Yeah, weirdos. The best example often cited is at the end of the 1500s or in the middle of the 1500s, the lowlands was what you call Belgium, the Netherlands and Luxembourg today.
Yeah.
And most of the wealth was in Antwerp and in the area that's Belgium. But
I hear Antwerp and I think diamonds.
Yeah. It was, and a lot of those merchants were Jewish merchants, which is why you often get that connection as well. Because, yeah, the Spanish and the Portuguese were in the Americas, in Africa, and bringing diamonds and silver and spices. Anyway, so the wealth was in Belgium, and a lot of the merchants were Jewish or Protestant, but the feudal title for the lowlands was inherited by the King of Spain, who was obviously an extremist Catholic, the same King of Spain that sent the Armada against the English. And, you know, the obviously hated Protestants, sent his army in the 1580s, occupied Belgium, kicked anyone who wasn't Catholic out, and most of them came up to Amsterdam. And again, right. You've kind of got this like, okay, like all for 1,000 years, Jews around Europe had to be lived in ghettos or segregated. And here it was kind of, yeah, bring your diamond knowledge up here and bring your contacts and your money and this kind of thing. And so again, it's tolerance through either necessity or financial, desire.
Exactly. It's not tolerance because we really love you. Yeah, it's tolerance because we love your money.
Yeah, I had a chat with the lads, with Alec and Jesse, about this as well. And looking at kind of like Dutch culture from a...
Shout out to Alec and Jesse, who Alec actually Jesse, own those Dambo guys, along with Neil.
Those Dambo guys, that guy. Yeah, so like I was talking to the lads about like their Western view. They're coming from, you know, Santa Cruz and Berkeley, which are like traditionally pretty liberal places, and they're coming over here going, yeah, it's liberal, but it's a different kind of liberal. It's like historically, I'm only finding out now that I'm actually, because I've been to Amsterdam a few times, but it was just like, let's fucking have a smoke and have a gawk and some tits. And
no one ever does that, Gordon.
I mean,
don't know what you're talking about.
You got a red blooded man. So I come over here now and I'm trying to talk to people and try and find out like what's actually going on. And you guys will be like Australian, like more westernized. The lads are from America, more liberal. And it's a weird different type of acceptance that has some motivation behind it. So historically, like, where does that come from? You were talking about on the boat ride yesterday, you were talking about the East India Company, where they had a bunch of
money.
I guess they were the biggest company, incorporated company ever.
Yeah, but the Netherlands had one of the first expressions of modern capitalism in history, right? And the East India Company was like the first publicly traded corporation in history, but they were looking at everything from a money making perspective. They definitely were not like looking at people and thinking, hey, yeah, let's all be friends with each other. It's they did a lot of very messed up things themselves. Yeah.
But it was Hadouken. Like they didn't really...
If you were a person living in the Banda Islands in Indonesia and you saw one of these Dutch East India Company ships coming to you, that would be spelling your impending doom.
Yeah, it's like the end of Apocalypto.
Can I give you an Amsterdam saying that kind of explains gedogen a bit more? So in Dutch you say, het maakt mij niet uit als je schijt op de tafel, so long as it niet spatteert op mijn bord. I don't care if you shit on the table, as long as it doesn't splatter on my plate.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Do
what you want, just don't be a dickhead because everyone else is trying to do the same.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that is a Dutch thing or an Amsterdam thing, because Amsterdam's certainly different from every other Dutch city.
The lads were saying being normal is cool. Like
But that's it. And that's kind of the Dutch conservatism. They often say, do even gewoon, be normal. What's the whole saying?
Normal is good enough.
Dan ben je al gek genoeg. Yeah. Just be normal, then you're already being crazy enough.
Yeah.
You've got this dual thing of like liberalism. We don't care. Do what you want. Just don't shit on the plate. And be normal.
Yeah, exactly.
So like, it's kind of this like, it's liberal, these two forces that like...
Really.
And that shows itself in politics as well. So you were saying yesterday there's 13 political parties... The biggest share is 22% for the slightly right of center party at the moment. So they have to have a coalition. So there is like a good ideological split in Dutch politics.
There is a massive split in Dutch politics. Yeah.
But it's more equally split
in the center. Though.
Yeah. It's the two forces pull each other to the center. Right?
Yeah. And because no one party ever makes a majority by itself, they kind of forced to. So they have this period of negotiations after an election where they try to make a coalition. And that involves everybody, like our good friend Julian said in our King's Day episode, you end up making a decision where it's a shit outcome, but it's the least shit for everyone.
Yeah.
So I'm not shitting on my place. There's a lot of shit in the property. So many rivers.
Yeah, and that process is called poldering. And a polder is a former lake that from the around the 1400s, they were draining using windmills.
Like reclaimed land.
Yeah, and then building walls around it and villages inside. And so poldering is really like everyone just negotiating, compromising for the betterment of everyone to the least shit solution possible.
And as Julian said. Before we get into historically, because I want to find out, like, you guys know a lot about Dutch history and it's massively far-reaching tentacles into like African culture, South American culture stuff.
Tentacles is a great way of describing
That's traditionally the old Punch magazine, like these big octopus, Pulpo, these lads taking over, just fucking up black people or brown people. Think this is a good system? Do you think this is like a functional, because everyone tries to find the least shit thing. Obviously, historically, this has been the same for 700, 800 years. If you're talking about like religious and economic refugees coming to Amsterdam and being given the kind of the free rein to start a whole society that has now blossomed into what we have now, which seems from the outside, really accepting. But now that I've dug even just a small bit under the surface, it seems to be like a little bit, not begrudging of somebody else's actions, but like it's like, I'll tolerate you, but I don't like you.
I don't have to like you.
But that's the thing.
But I accept that you are part of the community that I am. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's really functional. But it's obviously, there are also issues. And I think, I know you said, let's not go into the history yet, but something worth mentioning is that up until World War II, the society was also what you'd call pillarized.
You're right.
Where you had like the Protestant Calvinist pillar, the Jewish pillar, the Catholic pillar, and the working class pillar. And so you would belong in your pillar. So Amsterdam had all these pillars.
Right.
And people would like basically stay within their pillar in terms of the shops they went to, the schools they went to.
Right.
The newspapers, kind of thing, the radio stations they listened to, the schools they sent their children to.
So it's again, like, you're all Amsterdam.
So much more segregated society, a little bit like early turn of the century
culturally,
America.
Culturally segregated in a way. It didn't mean like it was... Like the Jewish community still had non-Jews living in it. You know,
sure,
like Rembrandt lived with the Jews.
But I had like Jew town, and I had like Catholic town, like Chinatown.
Yeah,
or
just your
little
general
little Moscow or whatever.
Your cultural and social facilities and institutions, you belong to one, and that's what you went to.
Right.
It didn't mean you couldn't marry someone from the other, or you know this and that. Like it was okay. We talk about Jews. It's the only city where Jews can marry non-Jews in the 1600s. In the Netherlands. And
it was also the first place that officially gay people got married for the first time in 2001.
First,
April 1st. Yeah. It wasn't a crazy April Fool's joke.
All of my Amsterdam tidbits people listening at home are all from those damn boat guys, boat tour.
That's all you need.
That you gave us yesterday. Yeah. But it's nice to know these little tidbits to try and frame like how history's had, or how the historical evolution of the Netherlands has had an influence on its politics. Because if you're coming in for the first time looking at it from the outside, it seems like an idyllic kind of thing. But when you scratch a little bit below the surface, there's a lot more...
It's complicated.
And it's very complicated now as well. Because like everywhere else in the world, there is also a big rise in people who are in the sort of right side of politics. And there's a new political party here, which I'm not going to mention because I don't agree with them and I don't want to talk about them, but they are very anti-immigration and they want to like close the borders of the Netherlands. They want to have a referendum to make the Netherlands, or to see if the Netherlands should leave the EU or not.
It's the modern populist kind of shit.
Exactly. And that happens here as well. So the Netherlands is not immune to that. And it's not some amazing paradise. It's just like anywhere else. But,
it just seems to have these historical and cultural tendencies that sort of see, I don't know. Yeah. It allows for complications of society. Like, you know, Gedoogbeleid. Okay, you're breaking the law, but it's not causing problems. So just whatever.
It would be an ideal place for illegal immigrants to come and hope that the Gedoogbeleid would allow them to just hang around and it could work for cash under the table. And because it's like a tolerated crime, not like what's happening in America now where it's trying to be more vilified or at least like culturally vilified. In Britain at the moment, there's a whole movement trying to, I think, delegitimize Muslim immigrants. I know in Sweden,
the exact same thing happens in the Netherlands as well. So I don't think people should come out of our conversation think the Netherlands is some amazing paradise where none of this modern day problems, none of these modern day problems are happening. It's the same discussion everywhere else in the world. But I find that the Dutch people are a little bit more civilized in the way they talk to each other, maybe a little bit more respectful of each other's opinions. And it's okay to have a different opinion, but we can talk about it.
Yeah, and that's coming from how...
That's poldering.
Yeah.
That's everyone's historical...
And they will always give you their opinion. As someone in a relationship with a Dutch person, trust me, they will always give you their opinion in every single matter.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't, and you can, and it's totally fine.
Your missus doesn't give you that thing where, well, if you don't know what you did wrong, I'm not going to tell you. It's like,
no, she'll tell me exactly.
So it's more like, let's talk about it and try to come to a solution instead of just yelling at each other.
That seems more progressive than a lot of societies, right? Yeah. Historically, where do you think that comes from then?
The water control. It's when they started living here in an urban sense in the 1000s, it was a boggy swamp, and because they were cutting ditches into it to try and drain it to farm it, it caused everything to start sinking. The sea started breaking through, and huge floods killed like over 100,000 people over about 200 years. And they started building...
So it was just like flash floods, and like the dam would break and
massive,
the whole city that they built up would just get washed away.
Towns and villages. And so you had these kind of regions with different towns on like what had become the coast, and the sea was coming in, and they started to build walls. But like, there's no point one town building a wall and not the other town connecting their wall, because then you'll just get flooded on your flanks. And so they had to start working together to build walls. And then, you know, it's everyone's kind of responsible for their part of the wall, and you have to cooperate and have regional, cooperation. And,
that early cooperation then obviously led to a civil engineering evolution much faster than the neighboring countries like Poland or Germany's coast or France.
Almost certainly. The oldest institutions in this country are the water boards.
Yeah.
And they started in the 11, 1200s.
Hmm. So like... Now Rotterdam is probably the biggest ingress for goods and stuff like that are being put into Europe. Like, it's one of the biggest ports because it's been around for so long, and the technology behind it is so...
It also has the craziest flood defense system. I'm going to try to drop some facts. I don't know if they're going to be 100% accurate, because it's been a while since I read about this.
Shady fact bomb coming.
But the flood defense in Rotterdam is a thing called the Maaslandkering, which is this gigantic gate. And there are computers measuring the water level. And if the computers predict that the storm surge coming in is going to be
2.5, I think.
Roughly 3 meters.
It was 3 and then it's 2.5.
Higher than what it normally is, then the gate will automatically close. Each arm of the gate is the size of the Eiffel Tower.
And twice
the weight of it lying on its side. And it takes maybe 45 minutes or so for it to swing into place. And then it fills up with water and it sinks down, and then it protects Rotterdam from any incoming water.
And there are six, like the gates of Mordor.
Are six other such systems. Like, that's the biggest one, but got six kind of, six or seven. Yeah.
I mean, that's engineering on a completely different scale than what you see in other places in the world. And when they make their flood defenses, they make them to have an acceptable failure rate of once every 10,000 years. Which is mind-blowing. Yeah, so you have these storms in America, so a 1-in-100-year storm, which seems to happen every 5 or 4 or 3 years these days. And then, we didn't know this was going to come, but here they're really preparing for that situation happening.
So you think of places like Houston, Texas, and New Orleans and all should have big giant Eiffel Tower doors?
Well, the Dutch are there now fixing, they've been fixing the levee since Katrina.
Yeah.
They get invited over to give advice. And so, who knows, maybe...
Flood experts.
Yeah, they are flood experts. So who knows, maybe the climate changing is another business opportunity for the Dutch people to make money from the rest of the world.
Well, they're actually rain-sodden country turns into the Dutch Riviera.
Yeah, I saw on the news recently, I think that the weather might be like Barcelona here by 2050, which sounds pretty good to me, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, it seems to be all looking up for the Dutch, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, sea level's rising, they, you know, are all over that. The reason they built that defense, it's worth saying, is that they had the last big flood after World War II in 1953, because the dike maintenance had not been kept up with since the war. And
all the little kids that had their fingers in it just grew up and had to move away.
All right, let's digress on that story. Okay. Hans Brinker and the story of the silver skate. not known in this country at all.
Okay.
Written in America by an American woman in the 1800s.
Just some bullshit.
Bullshit.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a good analogy for what's going on.
Yeah, but also
thinking about it.
But I think it's also very, like, I think a typical Dutch story of that would be the whole village is there sticking their fingers in, not just one kid, because it's a collective effort of flood events.
Okay, so that's interesting to know. So it's like one kid. I wonder in the real story.
There's no real story.
Probably should look it up. No, but I mean, in the story that the woman made up, did she say that it was like, a super innovative Protestant boy who went to the dam and put his finger in the dike or whatever? Like,
no, it was a kid going to visit his grandparents, and on the way home, he saw that. But it comes from an American social narrative and not a Dutch social narrative.
Right. Yeah. So do you think that there should be more information for people to know that there is this poldering and stuff? Because I don't think that's common knowledge, really.
No, I don't know.
Like, if for an American point of view, Amsterdam seems to be the place where you go, you smoke weed, you do whatever you like, and, you know, it's everything's legal, when in fact it's actually not legal.
No, it's gedogen.
Yeah, it's just... It's
more legal in America now.
But that's what I mean, yeah. So, like, do you think there's less Americans and stuff coming here because of that, or...?
I think it will change. And, yeah, it has changed. The type of people visiting now is definitely coming for other reasons than, say, 10 years ago when we came, where it was a lot of, smoking dope, looking at prostitutes. And now I think people are coming because they're hearing that Amsterdam is a beautiful city and it's got quality things worth looking at.
Absolutely does, yeah. If you guys could tell one story each from your research in your history podcast, the most, like, either interesting or the most influential element of Dutch history that has given us the Holland that we see today. Like, you talked yesterday about the Versets Museum and the resistance. That's like coming from a poldering of society where people come together against a common threat, like floods, but it was just like Nazis instead. Or
a flood of Nazis.
Yeah. So wet Nazis. And it smelled like dogs. It's awful. Or something from maybe a bit further back. There's some, I guess not like imperialistic stuff, but like there's some shady shit that the Dutch did that they kind of get away with now. Like, there's there's a lot of Southern African countries that are still kind of suffering because of imperialism in the late 1700s or early 19th century that people just forget about. Do you know? England is kind of blamed for some imperialism, and we had even more, like, you know, most recently, like Falklands War stuff, like, or Hong Kong, that kind of reignites that conversation around England being cunts, basically, or whatever. And
world champion cunts.
Yeah, like, I mean, the whole Brexit thing has that on the tip of the tongue. Like, we're talking about backstopping.
I mean, the Cricket World Cup, in case you're confused. We're better Southern Hemisphere people who were cheering for New Zealand in the Cricket World Cup.
It's turned from black caps into black armbands now. Just morning.
Yeah.
So like that kind of conversation is perpetual. Or, you know, like the Spanish and Portuguese and the atrocities that they've done in the Amazon. We were talking before we started recording about Graham Hancock and his the discovery of certain cities now that they're deforesting the Amazon. They're finding these huge, like, megalopolises under the jungle brush that had cities that had millions of people in it. And the Spanish and Portuguese went over and coughed a few times and fucking tens of millions of people died from a cold. Like, is there something in Dutch history that people should know about that would maybe reframe how people think about
definitely
the Netherlands?
So can I
I'll
set it up and you,
I don't know what you're going to talk about, so go ahead and talk.
We've talked about like what I call the pragmatism of Dutch culture. It's like stopping the flooding, making money. And when they joined the English and the Spanish and the Portuguese in the age of exploration, they had also gone into this war of independence against the Spanish and started identifying themselves as a republic and a Protestant republic.
Right.
And so that kind of also... freed up things a little bit, because I guess you could say that the intent was to make money rather than to, like, take land for the king or the queen, you know? So, for instance, Australia is a good example, New Zealand as well. You know, the Dutch were there way before the English, but realized that Australia's actually pretty shit, you know? It's, it's hot and dusty and full of animals who want to kill you. And
but God and, designed
and,
to kill people.
And was inhabited by animistic people who didn't really have a sense of, like, the same economic systems as the Dutch. So it didn't make sense to, like, build a colony there. Whereas in Cape Town, it made sense because that was a halfway point in getting to Asia from here.
Again, functional pragmatism.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas the British get to Australia and, you know, what is it?
This would make a good prison.
Yeah, no, it's a Will Anderson joke or something. It's, you know, the Dutch come there and go, whoa, this is shit. And the French get there and go, oh, this is shit. And the English get there and go, well, it's a bit shit, but it might get better around the corner.
Yeah,
we'll just send all the Irish there. Yeah, that's fine. That backflipped on them, by the way.
The Bill Hicks joke where it's like, as a punishment for, like, the smallest crime, you get put in a boat, and if you survive, you get to live on an Eden-like fucking paradise continent and make your fortune.
Yeah. So there's that in terms of slavery. The Dutch were a participant in at least 5% of the transatlantic slave trade.
And you can see the remnants and the kind of, there's a lot of
you can see it all
monuments all over the city here. Yeah.
But there aren't really monuments. Well, I mean, there are echoes of the slave trade all through.
The Queen's Carriage or the King's Carriage is a good one.
Yeah, it depicts slaves on the side of it.
The golden carriage that the monarch rides through.
There are houses in Amsterdam which have slaves on their gables.
Yeah.
Proudly displaying their
and 5% doesn't sound like much, but it's at least 500,000 people.
Yeah.
And that's, you know,
of whom 120,000 of them are estimated to have died on the voyage between Africa and the Caribbean, which is a horrendous amount of people.
And the Dutch call that an acceptable loss.
Well, it's another debate which is happening more in modern day Netherlands.
Had a look back.
Like, nobody's going to come back and ask for reparations about. Like, there's a lot of talk about
the people. Yeah. People might be wanting to do similar things to that now. So it's a topic which is happening. It's a discussion which is happening now
because it's kicking off in America at the moment. Like, do you think it'll reach back to the original slave nabbers? Could Holland be held to task?
It's a good question. I think, like, reparations is one thing, but I think it's how the society views their history. Which is, like, we've seen an amazing example in the 20th century of a country being forced to reconcile with its very recent history in Germany and Austria after World War II. And, you know, they've got a policy, in German, Vergangenheitsbewältigung, coming to terms with the past. And it's kind of like an enforced thing since the 60s that, for instance, Austria, I believe, also always has a civil servant at the Anne Frank House. And like in Austrian and German schools, you have to do certain amounts of study of the Holocaust and World War II. And
there's no brushing under the carpet. They're just let's not talk about
that. Yeah, and of course, after the war, that was how it was. But in the 60s and 70s, like that, it started to change.
Yeah, too soon.
Like the English have not had to do that. The Spanish have not had to do that. The Dutch have not had to do that. The French have not had to do that. You know, like the French didn't have to do that with Napoleon or Louis the 14th, or, you know.
But I think it is important that we in our world today acknowledge what happened in the past. And that's part of what we're trying to do in our podcast, is to look at the past and see what actually happened. And I don't believe that people should apologize for things which have happened in the past, because us today have had nothing to do with what happened in the past, even though we do benefit from things which have happened in the past. We need to acknowledge that we benefit from things which have happened in the past.
Like Dutch privilege.
Like
there are dudes, like you brought us on the boat yesterday with those damn boat guys. We went past some places, like you had the prince, what's his face, the 14th.
Not prince, but you have the house of the sixth family. We have a $150 million painting hanging in the window of their house.
Yeah, and they're so rich and they have so much like fantastically rare and expensive art in their house that the Dutch government forced them to make it publicly available, because you're rich, you don't need it anyway.
Yeah.
Like those people are obviously living from the endeavors of these slave masters, owners and makers.
Well, not necessarily.
They're the higher society
but
here.
But if you go back long enough, every single one of us has an ancestor who was a king and an ancestor who was a slave.
Yeah, okay. Like in America, you can have like the families that own slaves or whatever, like George Washington, the founding fathers, like they are, they're all slave owners because it was part of the culture. But there are, you know, talks of like white privilege because...
That's all to do with how the society is dealing with it today, not what happened in the past. And exactly what Julian said, if we are acknowledging what happened in the past and that we benefit or that we are at a disadvantage from it, then that's probably a step, like not giving out blame and guilt and that kind of thing, because it makes no sense to... You can feel compassion for the past, but you don't have to feel guilt.
So yeah, there's a certain element of tearing down. I think there's a certain element of equality of equity, and people are, you know, like the stuff of like, what was this new festival? What was it? New festival tickets? Top of my head shit now. I saw there was new festival tickets came out, and there was a black rapper was saying on Twitter, this festival is selling tickets that are like 40% cheaper for people of color, but white people have to pay full price. Mm. And he was going, what the fuck is this?
Mm.
Like thinking like, don't do this on my behalf.
Yeah.
There's stuff like that happening. There was an Australian cafe that were trying to counteract the wage gap by charging men like 20% more or whatever. And they went out of business. Like it's like get woke or go broke. So like for Dutch people, if there was a kind of a reparations, if there was a kind of a, like, if, let's say if Bernie Sanders was around here, he'd be going to the Six family, or he'd be going to the mega rich people who have built their fortunes off of the broken backs of slaves and that trade, and trying to take their riches to spread it out amongst the people. Netherlanders wouldn't do that though, right? They don't want to do that.
One of the things which I am really interested in, which is similar to this conversation, you were saying about tearing things down, because there's the big debate in America about tearing down statues of Confederate war people. And they had a similar kind of debate in the Netherlands, which we've talked about in a podcast we've made in the past, in this town Hoorn, which is just north of Amsterdam, where they have a statue of its most famous son, a guy called Jan Pieterszoon Koen. I said before about how if you were living in the Banda Islands and you saw a Dutch East India Company ship coming to you, it would be spelling your impending doom, because that guy led an expedition against the Bandanese where they massacred something like 14,500 out of a population of 15,000 people in the conquest for nutmeg. Which, like, do you ever eat nutmeg today? I never eat nutmeg. But
it was like oppression.
The only place in the world where it grew, and they wanted control of it, and they did what they had to do to get control of it, which involved horrendous mass murder. And this guy was the first or second Governor General of the East Indies.
First, I think.
Yeah. Off the top of my head. I don't know off the top of my head, but they have a big statue of him in the middle of the town. And a few years ago, a garbage truck accidentally ran into it and knocked over the statue. And then there was the question about what should they do with the statue? Should they put it up and honor this guy who has a pretty tainted past? Or should they try to forget about it? And the way that they tried to resolve the debate was by the local museum organizing a kind of mock trial of him, where they laid out all the facts about what he had done in his life. And the people who were visiting the museum could vote at the end of it about whether or not they should put the statue back in place as a kind of jury.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Very interesting shit.
And the result...
Such a Dutch approach.
Right? Yeah, that's what I mean. It's so weird. Like,
and the result of it was that the people voted that the statue should go back. And so they put the statue back and they changed the plaque commemorating him, and they laid out all the facts of what he really did. And at the end of it, it says, this statue is very controversial. Yeah. And I think that's a really interesting way of looking at this problem, because it's educating people, it's laying out what's happening, and it's giving people the choice about what to do.
Yeah.
If you erase the mistakes of the past, you're destined to make them again, right?
Exactly. So why not acknowledge the mistakes which we've made in the past and hope that we can learn from them and not repeat them?
Because it's all about history. Like, human history is all about history.
Yeah.
We all own it. We all belong to it. And we're all, you know, responsible for it and answerable to it.
It crisscrosses all of us.
Yeah.
There's also like, and I don't want to go too deep on it, but there's like a whole history of Dutch resistance against the Nazis and stuff here as well. And there's some people who colluded, who like ratted out their friends and family, and who have benefited from it and ended up like, oh yeah, I don't like those Jews up the street, so I'm going to tell the Nazis about that. And when they're out of the building, we can move in and take that building. And it was, you know, I guess, kind of like controversial after the war that those people were just left with that stuff. Do you, can you comment on that?
Some were, some weren't. So,
did
know,
they take it back? Or?
The worst thing that happened, I think, in this regard, is that of the 100,000+ Jews that were sent to concentration camps or had to go into hiding or were killed directly, about 4,000 returned to Amsterdam.
Mm.
And the city of Amsterdam charged them the rent in lieu of the time that they'd been in the concentration camps that they hadn't paid. So they had to pay, like, back pay rent. And they were not reparated until 2016.
Jesus.
Oh, their families, obviously. Yeah.
Oh, my God. You imagine, escaping the concentration camp by getting home and being like, oh, thank God we're home.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, jeez, we've been away. So, what?
Purple envelope from
all
the city.
All the fucking post is all up against the door. Like, you have to push the door open. There's loads of, like, final notice letters and shit. Like, that is grim.
Only slightly better than Dachau.
That's terrible.
Yeah, no, it's...
what's your one... I have to know this piece of history about Holland.
Junior.
What's your favorite bit? Like, the favorite weirdest thing that people may not know that they should know that will maybe push the Netherlands into a different light? We've already had the nasty history that's papered over.
Man, that's such a difficult question to be chucked on the spot.
What's your favorite?
My first to mind. Okay, the first thing that comes to mind, my favorite fact about Dutch history is that in 1672, when the Netherlands was invaded by pretty much all of its neighbors at once, in the so-called Rampjaar, the year of disaster, they had the English attacking them, the French coming in, had German princes coming at them. And the Netherlands at that time was a republic, and its political leader was lynched by a mob of people in The Hague, and his brother, who then barbecued them and ate them. It's called The Lynching of the De Witt Brothers. If you go to the Rijksmuseum, which you definitely should, you can see great paintings of it. they might be tolerant people in some circumstances, but if disaster strikes,
like everyone else,
watch out
for the mobs.
Yes, you can have some of the De Witt brothers on a waffle.
Hey, look,
maybe in some broth.
Probably not the worst Dutch food, let's face it.
Yeah, it's not. they'll hurt your arse on the way out, though, lads. Be careful.
The De Witts.
I think we're starting to running out of time, so I think we should start to wrap things up.
Sure, but tell us just a small bit about your show then, so people can come and find you.
Yeah.
So our show, as we mentioned earlier, is all about the history of the Netherlands. We are aiming to get through it by the sort of middle of next year, but you never know. We're going through a chronology of it, and then we're going to go back and fill in with sort of specific little topics and biographies and things like that.
Savage.
So definitely check that out. We have a mother or an umbrella body or company called...
is just the two of us.
Yeah, it's three of us. Hello to Dave, who's in absentia. It's called Republic of Amsterdam Radio. We have three podcasts on there, which is the history of the Netherlands. Our first podcast, which is called Stuff What You Tell Me, and is all about the role of resistance and rebellion in history, art, and culture. And we have a three-part special series called Free and Fearless, which is all about a story that took place here in World War II that is about some of the first underground press members in Amsterdam. So people who were producing and distributing anti-Nazi newspapers.
Some of that stuff in the Verzes Museum is cool. Like,
yeah, definitely.
Counter propaganda, and they had Radio Orange, and they were printing out papers.
Oh, yeah, it's amazing.
We talked about
what happened here in the underground press.
We have a bunch of Nazi episodes where, like, you know, we learned that Hitler mass produced radios and gave them to everybody in Germany just so that they would be able to listen. And the music was something to keep them entertained in between the bouts of propaganda. Yeah. So, like, that kind of and we were, theory of propaganda is really interesting.
And we were lucky enough when we made that series to get access to primary sources, which not many people have seen before, which were correspondence between the members of this group who had been arrested and were in concentration camps and were writing to their family throughout their time they were in jail. And the last letters which they wrote were written 2 hours before they were executed. Yeah, sort of saying goodbye to everybody and not regretting their actions of resistance and hoping that their brothers and sisters would do the same thing as them.
Yeah.
So it was really very emotional to read these things, and it was a really big honor for us to be able to tell that story. So I think it's really worth looking at and listening to.
Three-part series, 45 minutes each, and based, as Julian said, off those primary sources. And so that's all at republicofamsterdamradio.com. We also...
Or you can also just look on anywhere you get podcasts for History of the Netherlands or Stuff What You Tell Me or Free and Fearless.
And I'll put all those links in the description of this below.
And you should tell your people about what you do.
Tell all our listeners, Gordo.
This is a swap cast. So it's kind of, you know, get to know us, we get to know you. I'm Gordo. I'm the head honcho at Those Conspiracy Guys. And we do big deep dives into conspiracy theories, but also like the history of those conspiracy theories, which I guess if you're listening to the lads talk about their history, you know how important it is to look at it from a different point of view. We've done episodes on like historical figures. So we've done like assassinations like Martin Luther King, JFK and John Lennon and Princess Diana, which was a murder. The Queen did it. And undoubtedly. And then we look at stuff like the creation of these huge political or financial or, these organizations like the Federal Reserve and stuff like that. We've done episodes about like the banking system or the petrochemical industry and how that has been like a 150-year battle to secure that market for a bunch of like wrinkly old white dudes.
Buy Bitcoin.
Buy Facebook coin. It's the one that's going to win. Shit. And so we talk about a lot of different types of aspects of conspiratorial stuff, but it's mostly re-examining history or the stuff that we're told. I exclusively use internet sources and we run our bullshit meter over it and try and find the truth in big, deep dive, long podcasts. Some of them are 5, 6, 7 hours long. There's also a whole true crime section where so many of the stories that I found were, they ended up being like murderers or serial killers. Very interesting to look at. And they'd be much shorter, like 2 hours long, kind of like a very specific look into the personalities and the history behind those guys. And there's loads of extra stuff on YouTube and BitChute, and we have a Discord server with all of our people on it where you can come in and talk about history and conspiracy theories with the fans. Basically, everything is on thoseconspiracyguys.com, and we're on all the social media, and you can find us on all the podcast apps.
Subscribe right now, Gordo. That was a good little
Yeah, it's all right, man. It's they're long, and if you're working a job, I get a lot of people from the States and from the UK going like, you make my days driving a truck or working in an office. That much more bearable. It's a conversation between three people. So it's me and two other people, usually comedians or performers from Ireland, and then there's interviews and stuff with other people from other countries as well. So it's getting big. We're doing a documentary road trip now at the moment. That's why we're in Amsterdam, and it's all around Europe, so get ready for all that stuff. But thoseconspiracyguys.com has everything.
And our shows are much shorter than that. We try to keep them to 30 to 45 minutes if possible. Sometimes we get excited and go for almost an hour.
For the gal and the girl.
Yeah. For the people who are commuting to work, we try to keep it short and sweet if possible. And we really don't want to get super bogged down because we're trying to tell such a long amount of history in a few episodes.
I think
I would like to rant a bit more, but Julian keeps it very...
Yeah, we're trying to keep it tight as possible. And our shows are less ranty because we try to...
We script them and we spend time, we write them, we
make them as tight as possible for each one. So.
Our ones stop when we start falling asleep. We talk right right into the night times. Like, lads, I can't go on. That's the end. Okay, we're finished. It's like an endurance. Awesome. But thanks for listening to this swapcast. I'm Gordo. for those of you that don't know. And we're here with
Julian
and
Joe.
And yeah, like I said, we'll put all the links in the thing below. Share around the Swapcast if you like the sound of what's happening. And I guess we'll see you.
Yeah, thanks very much. And as you say in Dutch, doei.
And go to thosedamnpodcasts.com and book a tour.